Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. We're going to talk today about the 50 best albums of the year so far, which is literally a changing thing. We have a list on our website that is not changing, but I don't care. We're adding at least one album to it right now, which may mean we have to officially kick one off. Maybe we'll sit around and decide which one we're kicking off. That will be most of the show. But anyway, we have here Chris Weingarten, Simon Vosick-Levinson, and Sarah Grant. Hey, all.
Hello.
Yo.
Hey, guys.
So, yeah, I wanted to start by talking about an album that isn't even on the list because it came out after the list was made. That album is Everything Is Love by the Carters, a.k.a. Beyonce and Jay-Z. And can we all agree that this album would have been on the list had it come out in time?
Absolutely. No question.
Does anyone not like this album? Or Chris, is there anything? Tell us what you don't like about this album. Yeah, come on.
Our staff skeptic. You know, I certainly don't dislike the album. But, you know, I do think that the prompt embrace of a pop star who started rapping at the expense of the many, many, many fantastic rappers that we have going right now is a narrative I'm not 100% behind.
Did you just call Beyonce a pop star?
I mean, the most important, you know, billionaire, amazing pop star we have, but, you know, nonetheless, trying something new.
The song Salut is not the first song that everyone was talking about, but that's actually what's popping right now. I wonder if we can hear that in a moment, but what do you like about this album?
I mean, this album just has so much effortless joy and confidence. When Beyonce raps, she's just floating. She's on a level that's impossible, at least for me.
I mean, she's good. Don't get me wrong. She is good.
You can hear how much fun they're having in the studio. You can hear the genuine bond there. These aren't people who are sort of put together by a label. There's a genuineness to their back and forth when Jay-Z is in there ad-libbing. You know, she went crazy after one of Beyonce's verses. I love it.
I wish Jay-Z just would have stepped up and started singing too, though. That would have.
That's actually, it's true. It's only fair that if Beyonce unveils herself as a good rapper, that Jay-Z should have to do his utmost to just sing, and not like just the little Drake singing, like just, you know, belt it out. Like I'm talking runs and like he
just had, really
and
go it, for it.
And if he, yeah, just really go for it. I mean, in the other song, that you know, Ape Shit was the original thing. I mean, what's cool is hearing him. He's always evolved his flow. On this release particularly, he seems really comfortable with a lot of like more current flows and stuff and stylistic approaches, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, when Jay-Z is on, there's almost no one who it's more fun to listen to rap than him. He's just, you know, he's bouncing in triplets. He's doing all these incredible cadences and flows. It's just amazing, the mastery.
Do we have some music to play? Can we hear the Salut or Ape Shit? We have one
Ape
of those.
Shit.
Ape Shit we've got. Let's hear that.
Like kangaroos, tell these clowns we ain't amused. Man, the clips for that monkey business. 4-5 got changed for you. Motorcades when we came through. Presidential with the planes too. Went better against you with the residential. Undefeated with the cane too. I said no to the Super Bowl. You need me, I don't need
I think
you.
One of my favorite lines on the album is when Beyonce is like, pay me in equity. which is, I'm sure a sentence that she's said in real life many times, you know, but it's never been in a rap before to my knowledge. So let's go to things that are actually on the list. So Pusha T's album is on the list. We were talking about him and his feud with Drake the other day, and his is the only album among the slew of releases, the good music releases, the label he's president of. And it made me think, like, man, maybe it's a conflict of interest if you're the president of the label and you make the only good one out of all the stuff your label's releasing that year.
That's why it went first.
Yeah, right. Exactly. let's put that the good one first. But I mean, we won't dwell on it since we've talked a little bit about him recently. But what works for you about the album? And it does have the virtues of all the good music albums recently, which is it's very short and tight, which is their thing right now.
Yeah, it's like 23 minutes, 22 minutes, and you know,
it's an EP, really. But yes,
no, I mean, if they want to call, I mean, like, you know, we are entering an era where, you know, the semantics of what is an album, what is an EP, what is a release, what is a playlist, you know, it's all being toyed with right now because, you know, the way we consume music is so fluid. So, you know, if he wants to call it an album, it's an album as far as I'm concerned. You know, it really is like no frills, no nonsense. Every beat is just masterfully put together. You know, there's no BS on it. It's meat and potatoes rap, as you know, my old balding ass understands understands rap music. Like, it's definitely, you know, the rap qua rap, as it were.
Rapity rap, I think, is the term now.
Bars.
Bars.
Rapity rap. So the opening track is If You Know, You Know. I don't know if we can get that one ready, but...
And, you know, the sample on that is this metal band from Ypsilanti, Michigan called Air.
And not the other Air.
Not the many other Airs that if we wanted to totally dork out here.
Oh God, I just opened a door to hell.
But let's hear that song.
Ladies and gentlemen, yeah. Let's
drug dealers ringing off. I just happen to be alumni. Too legit, they still looking at me with one eye. The company I keep is not corporate enough.
You know, and that's the sample is from a Numero Group compilation, and I think that Numero Group is really kind of capturing the zeitgeist of what people want as far as reissue music right now, and as far as like what's cool and under-heralded in a way that like Rhino was 20 years ago. And I think it really says a lot that Kanye is the biggest producer in the universe is gravitating big reissues.
It's interesting how, and we won't get into a whole Kanye thing again, but it's interesting how Kanye's mojo as a producer seems to be the last thing to go.
Kanye started as an incredible producer and he's still got it. I think sometimes that's not where his main attention is, but when he focuses, he's one of the greatest producers.
You know, he treats the MPC like an instrument here. You know, like that's the thing. Like he started, in the late 90s, early aughts, playing the MPC like an instrument, and here he's doing it again. He's phenomenal at it.
Let's talk about Snail Mail. Is it her? Is she Snail Mail? Is it one of those situations? Yeah. I get these so confused because she has a band as well. Yeah.
She has a band that she plays with, but Snail Mail is her. It's one singular, incredibly talented musician.
Yeah, so it's an 18-year-old, literally recent high school graduate, a young queer girl who is making this indie rock that I think Corey Groh, who wrote our little write-up of it, says that, indie rock has entered its sort of Black Crowes phase in which it's sort of somewhat reenacting the indie of an earlier era. That may or may not be true, but it is. I've just, the moment I heard her in the last year, I was really captivated. I mean, she's got a real talent that I think transcends even the style of what she's working in, like a songwriting talent, a voice. Like, she's really something special. I know you're a big fan, Simon.
Yeah, her name is Lindsay Jordan. She's incredibly compelling, amazing guitarist, and as you say, just a great classically talented songwriter. She knows how to construct a verse, a bridge, a hook that hits exactly where it's supposed to hit. When you think of songs like Heatwave, my favorite single off of this album, that song is just perfect. There's no wasted moment on it. There's a guitar solo that's short but perfect. She goes to the bridge exactly when she wants to go to the bridge. There's a classical perfection to that song.
I think if there's a wave of rock that's making a little bit, I've just wandered into a linguistic nightmare, but basically what I was going to say is a wave of rock that's making bigger waves, which is a horrible, horrible thing to say. But basically, yeah, if some of this rock is coming up a little bit more, it seems to be because people are writing better songs, maybe digging back in on the songwriting. A lot of these people have grown up on very well-crafted pop in addition to whatever rock they're listening to, and I can't help but thinking that bleeds in. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, right, style and vibe and feel are good, but you have to have the songs, and I think that's true across a lot of the great young indie rock acts that we're hearing now,
right,
from Snail Mail to Soccer Mommy to lots of others.
Right. You end up sounding like Clive Davis or something when you say that, but there is truth in that. And I think some of the pressure that was off, because a lot of these people were like, there's no way, because of stylistic changes, if I write my little rock songs, they'll never get on the radio anyway. And I think lack of pressure and that lack of like any possibility of it, and the lack of A&R people asking for the single, I think genuinely hurt rock. That's my weird counterintuitive pitch there. But let's hear Heatwave, which Simon has put up for the potential song of the summer.
Never get up.
Yeah. And sorry, you were nodding your head. You're a big fan of that.
Well, as Simon was speaking about her, I was reminded by someone else who's on the list, Lucy Dacus, who's also, you know, an incredibly talented songwriter. And just, you know, her album Night Shift is one of my favorites of the year so far. And very similarly, she kind of came out of nowhere. She's from Richmond, Virginia, and, you know, had this kind of meteoric breakthrough moment in the last couple of years and never really expected it. And I think it's because of that freedom, the support. You know, it sounds kind of like a cliche, but, you know, her songs are so freewheeling on her records in a similar way. The album is called Historian, song Night Shift, but all of the songs are very long on this album, but they don't feel like it because she has these incredible, you know, time signatures that she switches up between. And, you know, so it's almost like four, you know, Night Shift, for example, is, you know, it's got these four kind of different segments that you kind of go through almost like seasons. And or phases of the day. It's a really powerful song, breakup anthem, and kind of.
Well, let's check that out.
Kiss your lips, so I know how it felt. Pay for my coffee and leave before the sun goes down. Walk 4 hours in the dark, feeling all hell.
Courtney Barnett was slightly or came before a lot of these acts, and she had her new album, which was like a little more of an inward looking album, a little bit not embittered, but it had a different mood to it. Tell me how you really feel. But she's definitely one of the great singer songwriters at the moment. What do you guys like about this album that made it end up here?
Well, I think every song on Tell Me How You Really Feel has that kind of roiling emotional intensity. She's arguing with herself, arguing with people in her life. There's no sort of slack, dull moments on this album. I think of the song Charity, another song that has sort of a perfect indie rock hook, sort of anthemic sounding, where she's sort of interrogating herself. She says, "You must be having so much fun. Everything's amazing," right? You would think it would be great to be, you know, heralded as one of the great singer-songwriters of your generation, but that's not always the case.
Well, it's the classic sort of second album-y thing. It's interesting to watch that play out. It's always interesting, like, she must be aware of the cliche, and it's like, am I going to play into it? Or it's like, that's how I'm feeling. Like, it's not that great right now. And she does have that 90s thing to her, so it kind of makes sense that she would kind of turn around on that. Weirdly, Stephen Hayden, a friend of the show, rock critic, compares her to Tom Petty, which maybe is just I don't know. Do you see? I don't really get it, quite honestly. Next time we get up Stephen, I will ask him about it.
I think I can kind of see it. There are moments when Courtney Barnett's music feels like it could kind of work on a road trip in the way that a great Petty song does, where it has this kind of like rollicking, you know, wind blowing through your hair energy. But I think that's as far as it goes.
We'll ask him. But let's hear that if we can. So rock is really living, at least right now, in the last 10 minutes on the show. to switch to pop, Shawn Mendes, he has his album. It's actually also called Shawn Mendes, but what people don't realize is the title is pronounced Shawn Mendes. So that's I got the title and his name confused. But this is not someone who you would have expected to show up on any critics list. He was a very sort of in our own write-up, you know, is often forgettable, pop and B leaning white male stars. And then he's like one of those guys. So all of a sudden he came out and he made, you know, a good album, I guess, from what I've liked, what I've heard from it so far. Are you a fan?
I am. And I wasn't expecting to be a fan, to be honest. I mean, he's, you know, for an album like this to have to lead with a song like In My Blood, which is so, raw. And he has spoken about that and how that was jarring for people and producers when he first brought that forward. You know, it's a song about kind of reckoning with shame, with reckoning with self-doubt. And he goes to a really dark place on it, which is striking for a young, otherwise very kind of shiny looking pop star.
Yeah, he's known for his abs is a thing he's known for. He's he has like a 19 pack. It's crazy. Our colleague Andy Green asked him like 8 questions about his abs. So he determined he says he works on them very hard. So good for him. It's, you know, when your abs and your hooks are on point, that's when you become a pop star. And one of the things that's interesting about this album, a few things, is it's got like a real, and I'm not going to say murderer's row because I hate that phrase. It's got a real murderer's row of co-writers on it. Julia Michaels, Ed Sheeran, you know, Ryan Tedder. It's got a duet with Khalid. It's got a lot of like help on it. And then John Mayer plays guitar on it. And the other thing is it's sort of John Mayer core. We were talking about this in the office. There is this thing where John Mayer is like a godfather for a whole generation, in fact, of people of varying styles, which is just, it's just one of the things you have to adjust. Like John Mayer's been around for a while, and he is a major respected influence, which, you know, perhaps wouldn't surprise John Mayer given his self-conception, but might surprise some critics who were pretty hard on him in the 2000s.
It is surprising. I remember a couple of years ago when John Mayer showed up playing a solo on Frank Ocean's first major label album. That was such a sort of break your brain moment for a lot of critics, people who love Frank Ocean but would otherwise hate John Mayer. And they had to admit, you know, it's a pretty good solo. He sounds good.
I think the John Mayer essence is really happening. And I think that he will be viewed entirely differently in a couple of years, as long as he doesn't do anything weird in his dating life or say anything horrible in interviews. But then I really do.
So we'll give this opinion another 2-3 weeks, I'm guessing.
I really do. No, I mean, my sense is really, I mean, when you combine, this is a side note, but I really, when you combine the fact that he's, you know, the frontman of the Grateful Dead or whatever, how we would call it, with like this burgeoning new respectability among young pop stars combined with the decent music he's making currently, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, he's like a chill millennial Jerry Garcia, and it turns out that's something people like.
Well, it's also, he's probably, it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of his songs are among the first songs that, you know, these young people, not these young people, are learning on guitar for the first time. I mean, my little brother learned a John Mayer song when he was in high school alongside the Beatles and, you know, the classics.
Give me an
address. Smoke on the Water.
Give me his address. I'm going to mail him some Clash CDs.
Do we have In My Blood from that album? Let's hear that if we can.
Help me. It's like the walls are caving in. Sometimes I feel like giving up, but I just can't. It isn't in my
blood. So that's Shawn Mendes, and that's the opening track to his new album, and it's called In My Blood. And you're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. We're talking about the top 50 albums of the year so far, and we'll be right back with a whole lot more.
Just take her home and you'll feel better. Keep telling me that it gets better.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, Walmart, Nike, Wine.com, Samsung, Lenovo, Sephora, and more. And even stack sales on top of cashback. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Where should we go? Where should we go? How about Hines? I Don't Run. That's another Simon favorite, I think.
Yeah, I love that album. Hines are another example of today's generation of young people with guitars channeling stuff that was cool 15 or 20 years ago and making it completely fresh and fun and new. This is their second album. They're a band from Madrid, Spain. They grew up loving The Strokes. They actually hired Gordon Raphael, who produced the first two Strokes albums, to produce this album. And wouldn't you know it, it sounds like an awesome, cool Strokes album for 2018. I love it.
I love that because there's, whenever you're someone like Gordon Raphael, just on an employment basis, it's like, first you're hot, everyone wants you, and then it's like, oh, no one wants your dated Strokes sound, and then like 10 years pass or whatever, and it's like, oh, we want that awesome classic sound that you want. That's how it works, you know?
Right, and you know, I should add, you know, in addition to hiring the Strokes producer, Hines are also genuinely great songwriters and musicians in their own right.
It's all about the dude they hired. That's all I care about. No, of course, yes.
No, and yeah, so they have two singer guitarists, both really talented, slightly different styles that complement each other really well. Just, you know, sort of great classic indie rock sounds. Really fun live if you see them too. They put on a really rowdy, raucous show.
Is there a particular song we should be looking at? We can.
Can you play Soberland?
It's funny because one of the things with them is like every picture I've ever seen of them, that they're so intimidatingly hip. They seem, I think it must be like sort of a Spain thing. Like they're like five levels up as hipsters. They just seem like they're so like languid. That's their. It's like, well, we just recorded this. Like it's like you interviewed really them cool. once, right? And then weren't they like really really cool and chill?
They're incredibly cool. Yeah, no question. There is a level of cool that I think like an average American indie rock band can't quite attain.
Well, let's hear that if we can. Chris, do you want to take a couple picks of stuff that is your babies on this list?
Well, my favorite album of the year so far is Autechre's NTS Sessions 1 through 4, which is a 7-hour, 59-minute data dump of of some of the most batshit inventive, cutting-edge electronic music that I've heard in years. You know, these guys have been around, you know, since the 90s, and they've stumbled across this kind of new way of making music, and I'm not sure what part of it is composition, what part of it is improv, what part, you know, some of it's like jazz, some of it's like jamming, but, you know, they're using, some of it's artificial intelligence, like using these computer programs to sort of, you know, help propel these alien rhythms and completely mutated sounds, and it's absolutely unlike any music on earth right now.
One of the first ways they kind of hit the mainstream was Tom York was kept name dropping them around the Kid A era.
Absolutely.
So I wonder if he's going to hear this now and embark on some kind of other Radiohead mutation just based on this.
I mean, we could only hope. If everything sounded like this, I would be so amped. Like it really does like pull me out of the familiar rhythms and textures and sounds and you know, song structures I'm used to. They really are, and I've been calling them the world's most cerebral jam band. So this song that I have you know, that they're gonna cue up right now is called Gonk Steady One, and it is 22 minutes long. We're obviously not going to hear all of it.
And let's hear that if we can. Do we have it?
Sorry. You have to hear all 7 hours to really appreciate it.
I mean, honestly, I could really write to this. I would like to put this on while working, because like, it's. I always like these guys. I haven't listened to them since the early to mid 2000s. But this is,
well, if you have a spare 7 hours and 59 minutes, I certainly would recommend this. The last one is, you know, like near the last session has like nearly an hour of, you know, weird. You know, alien drone that, you know, that sounds just like this, you know, alien shoegaze stuff. It's beautiful. It's weird. It is takes me completely out of all expectations I have about music, and it is basically the only thing I can get excited about right now.
Well, I commend you for getting it on this list, honestly. That's, you know, because think of how many people who never would have been aware of it got introduced to it. So that's cool. And we're hopefully at least one person listening to it right now was like, I got to check that out. And it's AUTECHRE, by the way. Phonetically, you never would have gotten it. All right, what else? You want to do? Let's do another weird thing. What do you got?
Another weird thing. Well, I mean, I don't want to call them. I don't want to say weird because you know they are incredibly popular in their home country, but it's certainly a little off the American radar. Is a Nigerian band Town National. And
yeah, certainly not weird. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it's definitely not something that you know gets a lot of radio play in America. And you know, there's been a lot of American indie rock labels signing African rock bands in the last, you know, 5-6 years, and a lot of them are just getting heavier and heavier and harder and harder. And these guys, you know, are almost like a heavy math rock band, but you know, combining this kind of desert blues guitar, and you know, it really is just, you know, rhythmically intense and you know, viscerally huge. And the first song on that rules.
We can hear that, but that'd be great. Oh my God, wait till Trey Anastasio hears this. It's like we've got the next 10 years of Phish.
Yeah, and the tremor is just an absolute beast. And, you know, it definitely is. I love this kind of, you know, the new heaviness to these bands that are, you know, getting exposure in America.
Sarah, what jumps out on the list for you? Where would you like to go?
Are we talking weird or
no,
surprising?
No, just you, whatever you like.
I have to say, as of today, because I listened to it for the first time front to back, do not sleep on the new Judas Priest album,
wow,
which Corey has been telling me, Corey Crow, our colleague, who's the Judas Priest guru, Firepower is their 18th studio album. Next year they're turning
50.
The band is 50.
50
yeah.
years old.
I mean, Black Sabbath is, you know, with them retired, they're kind of the, you know, the gatekeepers of that first wave of heavy metal.
I can't imagine doing anything for 50 years.
If you
let
had
alone
told me that this was their
band.
If you had told me that this was their second album, I would have believed you. I mean, it is so much fun. I mean, there's so many great songs. The first three songs are just amazing. You could pick any one of them.
Well, let's do the opener if we can.
Firepower,
all
right?
Right. With weapons strong, we triumph future. Invincible through every storm. Bring in the fall to be defeated. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I mean, people. There's a tendency to just dismiss anything late career from people, and that's obviously a terrible mistake.
And I would have totally done that, yeah. But if it hadn't been for this list, I might have missed this album. But I mean, it's just everything you want from them. And I mean, Rob Halford sounds amazing. Voice is completely intact. You've got those like dueling six string solos, and it's just a fun, heavy album for the summer.
Chris?
Oh, well, speaking of fun, heavy albums, the the Sleep album, The Sciences,
yes,
is the more contemporary metal album on the list. And, you know, they have had a really fascinating career of just sort of being this underground 90s band. And after they disappeared, like, their legend just grew and grew and grew. And I think this is like their first album in 19 years or something like that. Mm. And it, you know, they came back and, you know, so much of contemporary, you know, sludge and doom and, you know, subterranean metal owes a huge debt of gratitude to them. And so they come back and it not only sounds completely contemporary, but, you know, it just rocks. It's blazing. The second song, Marijuana Knots theme. You know, the riffs are so airy and so big. Like, I could listen to a whole record of just the guitar tone on this.
You have another pick, Sarah?
And I do. On the other side of the spectrum, Kacey Musgraves' Golden Hour.
Oh, yeah. That might be great. Maybe my favorite album of the year.
Yeah, it's every time I listen to it, I find different things I like about it. It is, I think, her most elegant album. She really found, I mean, kind of country disco. Who knew that that was, that she could make that sound so appealing? For a lot of people, that sounds like a nightmare, but it really just sounds like you're opening a window on a clear day. Her vocals are pristine. The melodies are, they're just beautiful. She made a really, it's just a striking album, and she, I think she kind of condensed her entire kind of artistic vision on this album.
You know, for people who haven't been following her, she's a country singer-songwriter, and this is sort of her least country album, which can always be dangerous territory, but it's very, very elegantly done and still quite country-tinged and just very lovely. She got married, and it's a happy record. It's just sort of this, it's just full bliss. And, you know, the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, is this sort of country Carly Rae Jepsen? Because it hit a similar sort of like blissed out, love struck thing. I frankly like it better than Carly Rae Jepsen. I'm just a huge fan of it. We've tried to have Kacey on the show. Maybe she can be. There was a chance she could have been today. She's in town. We tried, actually.
I'm seeing her tonight.
Yeah, she's opening for Harry Styles. And maybe we can hear. I love Space Cowboy. There's a lot of great songs on that.
I was just going to say.
It's a silly little pun. But
it's not the NSYNC cover.
Yeah, but if we can hear that, let's do it. So yeah, she just, you know, she said to me when I interviewed her earlier this year, it's like, you know, because she's been actually politically outspoken in the past and not particularly on this record. And her thing was like, you know what, I just kind of feel like people need a little beauty right now. And she's not wrong, you know. Simon, do you have a pick for something else?
Can we talk about the Ray Shremmerd album?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ray Shremmerd, they're two brothers from Tupelo, Mississippi, who make goofy, silly, incredibly fun pop rap music. This is their third album following Shrem Life and Shrem Life 2. They took the Outkast-esque tack of making two solo albums, and they topped that by also making a joint album. So it's a triple album of sorts, and it's just incredibly fun, way more fun than that sort of cumbersome concept makes it sound. The song Power Glide is one of the most like sheer, joyful 3 minutes of music that you hear all year.
And maybe we can hear that in a minute. But these were, I mean, they had the song Black Beatles, of course.
Right. Chart topping with Black Beatles. I thought, you know, their first album was amazing with No Flex Zone. Mm-hmm. They and their right-hand producer, Mike Will, just have an incredible gift for just packing an amazing amount of, like, joy into music.
How much of the album did Mike Will Made It actually produce? Or I assume he executive produced the whole thing.
Yeah, he produced a bunch of it. Yeah, but they did work with some other producers on this one to broaden their sound a little bit.
So are you team Sway Lee or team Slim Jimmy?
I think they're best together, but I will say that listening to the solo albums, I think Sway Lee's is a little better. Swaycation.
Wow, we are going to be completely opposed here because I am all about the Slim Jimmy record, which is you know, definitely like the loud, booming, you know, post Miami bass, post crunk album that I'm you know, certainly.
Post-crunk. I love post-crunk as a genre. That's, yeah, let's hear that. And we're almost done, but we wanted to talk definitely about Cardi B. Cardi B, the first time she was on the cover of Rolling Stone last year, was very concerned, even she was concerned, that she could be a one-hit wonder. She had Bodak Yellow, and it was such a great song, but it sort of came out of nowhere. She did not have a long history of rapping. She was, in some ways, could have been destined to be a complete one-hit wonder, but she worked really hard and turned out to have a lot of talent, and she made a great album, right?
Yeah, I mean, what an awesome surprise. I think, yeah, as you say, both for Cardi and for us, the listening public, that, you know, we already knew that she had one great hit. We knew she was an incredibly compelling social media and reality TV presence, but she's actually also an album artist. Her album Invasion of Privacy is an album you can sit down to and listen to front to back, which is more than a lot of other popular musicians can say.
Yeah, I mean, which is more than you can say about a lot of rappers who are even more famous than her.
Right, so I think you really have to sort of take hats off to Cardi. I mean, she made a great album.
Yeah, you know, when... No, I'm going to interrupt the woman in the room to talk about Cardi B. This is how we do things. No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, once I start, I'm not going to be able to stop because it's... I mean, just today when I was looking at this, I mean, I can't even organize my thoughts. The song Ring... blew my mind in a new way today. She starts off the song in a way that reminded me of Patti Smith's Because the Night, which just turned 40. Yeah. Cardi sings, should I call first? I can't decide. I want to, but a bitch got pride. I mean, this is just...
Bruce originally wrote for those lyrics.
Yes, yeah. Well, and Patti sings, love is a ring, the telephone. I mean, it's... you know, just a continuum. Cardi is amazing. My personal favorite song, Be Careful, is... I know it's not the song of the summer, but it's kind of my prayer of the summer. I can't remember the last time I actually wrote my diary earnestly about a song. And I mean, every verse is just poetry. It's John Keats.
Which one should we hear?
I mean, but the song of the summer, though, is I Like It, right?
Gotta hear
that.
I don't even think we have to cue that up. I think we can tell everyone who's driving now to roll down their window and just listen for the next 30 seconds. You'll probably hear someone playing.
Well, let's try it anyway.
The ones that look like socks. I like going to the Tula. I put rocks all in my watch. I like sexes from my exes when they want a second chance. I like proving niggas wrong. I do what they say I can. They call me Cardi, Cardi.
And Cardi is on the cover of our big relaunch issue right now. You know, very, very pregnant. And it's quite a striking cover if you've seen it. And the story is by Vanessa Grigoriadis, wrote a great story. And
first pregnant belly on the cover of Rolling Stone, I think.
You know, I don't know for sure. Rick Ross. Besides, Rick Ross had like triplets, but besides that, yeah, I guess so. Maybe so.
It's pretty badass.
Demi? Wasn't
that was actually Vanity Fair.
I think that this is the first. I did a little research. There's no other. I mean, it's pretty rare to see a full on naked belly on the cover of a music magazine. So,
but.
Well, let me say one more thing about the Cardi B record.
Sure.
Is it like, you know, when there is a hot single or a hot, you know, and no one last year, hands down, was hotter than Cardi B. She was the name last year. And usually when you follow up an album with that, it's, you know, 17 major label cooks, you know, throwing stuff in the soup, and you get this, you know, weird post everything amalgam of like, okay, here's our hope to get the EDM audience, and then here's like, you know, the weird, you know, and it's like, it's completely avoided that. You know, there's maybe, I think there's like one ballad on the whole record, and the rest is just, she just goes.
But so the thing about Cardi's album is that it is major label A&R in that sense. There are a ton of different producers and co-writers, and yet the force of Cardi's personality makes it all cohere. It's incredible.
Simon, you said your favorite record of the year was Beach House's 7.
Yeah, so, you know, talk about career longevity. This is their 7th album. They've been making great music for a long time.
Kind of take a step back and explain who they are, maybe.
Yeah, they're a duo from Baltimore that make really dreamy, romantic indie pop. The rap on them from people who don't like them is that their albums sound the same. I think that that's actually a great thing about them. But, you know, the new album is a real leap forward. If you listen to the song Pay No Mind, that's just like a great classic power ballad.
Yeah, I mean, that is the rap that, to my knowledge, they have people who love them mm-hmm. and people who are totally indifferent to them, and I've not seen any in between.
Right, so the indifferent people are wrong, just for the record.
Yeah.
The people who love them are right. But, you know, I mean, there is like a gradual evolution in their records, but I think on this one, their 7th album, they've really stepped forward in a really exciting way.
And you're a fan, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, a huge, huge fan. I I will say that given our list of the best songs of the 2000s or 2010s that we just put out on this issue, I was thinking a lot about Karen O, and I think that Victoria Legrand is similarly one of the most influential voices in, you know, modern music today. Okay. Whether you're a fan or not, whether you know them or not.
Well, Chris, you eloquently stated
more like Karen Z Z Z Z Z.
You said, I believe, "fuck Beach House" was the quote from Chris Weingarten.
I just cannot get with this, you know, somnambulant, hazy goop.
I thought you excited.
Oh, it's not goop.
And, you know, I mean, I ride for low. That's a little more, cleaner and, more studiously put together, in my opinion. But, you know, yeah, give me my goop in great, disgusting chunks like Sleep, who I hope we can hear very soon.
This is a list of the top 50 albums of 2018. It's on our website, and it's pretty detailed. We're not going to be adding to it, but if you want to know what we're going to be adding to it, just follow the, you know, the reviews we'll post. And then at the end of the year, we're going to post another list about, you know, that's more definitive, and some of the albums on this list will just disappear. And that won't mean they're not good. It just means that maybe
they're not the best.
They're not the best, or just like the person arguing for them didn't have a good argument. It's hard to say. But this has been Rolling Stone Music Now. I had Chris Weingarten, Simon Vozek-Levinson, and Sarah Grant. And thanks for being here. And we will be back next week here on Sirius XM's Volume, Channel 106. In the meantime, we're a podcast. You can download us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Maybe leave us a nice review on iTunes if you can. I read them all. And even the crazy ones. And we will see you next week. And as always, thanks for listening.